a lot of people see the horrors of how the U.S. was created, built on genocide and slavery, seeing those things as a thing of the past, right? White folks, I think, have a hard time seeing the ways they benefit right now from white supremacy. And you produced a whole podcast series on that called Seeing White. Can you give us just a few examples?
Well, the thing that comes to mind, first of all, is we did an episode called White Affirmative Action. And it just lays out 400 years of history of basically goodies being given to white people. I think we tend to emphasize, when we think of a history of racism, we think about the impediments that were placed in front of black people and Native Americans and other people of color, but not so much emphasis on the fact that there's just been a lot of government largesse given to white people in the form of land, in the form of low interest mortgages that people of color were excluded from, and on and on and on. And there's just a long list of these things. So that, for example, it really helps explain the dramatic wealth gap that we have, that the average African-American family in the United States has about one-tenth the wealth of the average white family. So it's something that we're all living with, absolutely.
Right. And with COVID, we're seeing, you know, Native Americans, migrants, African Americans disproportionately getting sick and dying in this pandemic. How can the sort of average white person in America start to understand this crisis as a continuation of those systems of doling out wealth to white people and impediments to people of color? A continuation of those racist systems you're talking about?
Yeah, there are just a number of reasons for the greater vulnerability on average that people of color have in this moment. And, you know, these are being pointed out by a lot of people, but the fact that black and brown people are much more likely than white people to be working in industries that have no choice but to go to work right now and aren't be able to do so in a way that keeps them safe, especially in service industries and things like that, right? Or in meatpacking plants and so on, some of these other places, or, you know, as taking care of people in nursing homes or prison guards, all these places where people are facing special danger, these are disproportionately employ black and brown people. Of course, there's also a long history of health disparity that has to do with a variety of things, including the stress that comes with living in a racist society that black and brown people suffer from, and so are more likely to have these pre-existing conditions that cause problems with COVID. So I think we just need to try to be more informed and more mindful and understand how our society actually works and how we got to this point. And then to try to just be more kind of humble and thoughtful about what the results of that are and who is really paying the price in this moment. It's absolutely tragic, but not really surprising.
Your latest podcast series is called The Land That Never Has Been Yet, all about how democracy and capitalism are actually at odds in America. Can you talk about how we're seeing that in like a more clear, amplified way during the pandemic?
Oh, I think that's a really interesting question. Yeah. And we did do a bonus episode where we talked about it in a sense that, you know, we're seeing this choice, right, that's really in a pretty stark way that people are making between how much are we going to prioritize taking care of one another and keeping people safe, versus how much are we going to, you know, try to keep the economy going. And, you know, the fact that our industries just collapse, basically, if you don't have consumers out there spending money, and that even, for example, our healthcare system, that millions and millions of people will lose their healthcare if they lose their jobs, right? We're seeing the ways in which our dependence on a kind of free market capitalist system leaves a lot of people very vulnerable. And then, so the choice is, do we take care of one another, which I think you could say is a very democratic idea. Let's just try to make sure everybody's okay, versus keeping this system going that's based on creating wealth through the sale of stuff and through, you know, through the exploitation of labor and so on. So you see this very stark, it's come out in an unusually stark way in this moment. And then you can sort of watch which of those things people care more about.
You and your collaborator, Dr. Chenjerai Kumanyika, did this episode about the pandemic, and you were saying, you know, our federal government's dedication to profit and keeping corporations afloat is a big part of why our preparations for this disaster were so awful. But this sort of like trading lives for money, like that's nothing new, right? I mean, has it always been like this and we just weren't seeing it as clearly?
I think so. Well, and we go in our 12-episode season, which is really exploring American democracy, past and present. We go back to the founding of the country in the early decades of the country's development, and really sort of show how the economic wealth of the United States up until the middle of the 19th century, where it really became one of the richest countries in the world, was built almost entirely on the enslaved labor in the cotton trade. And so that was, you know, that's a pretty profoundly anti-democratic arrangement for a society, right? It's about as profoundly anti-democratic as you could get. We're going to enslave a huge proportion of the population to produce stuff for us, never mind those people being anything remotely considered, you know, as citizens of the country, and for the purpose of building a wealthy society, but a society that it particularly creates wealth for a relative few, right, who own the plantations and who own the cotton milling industry in the Northeast and so on, and the banking and all that that grows up around it. And the founders of the country at the time of the Constitution said things that made clear that they thought there was a tension between the less democracy you have, the more economic growth that you're able to have, and vice versa. If you're going to have a lot of democracy, that's probably going to mean you're going to have less economic growth for the wealthy. And they built in systems in the very foundations of the country that emphasized private property and the ability to build wealth through capitalism. So it goes back right to the beginning of the country.
And along that same vein, I mean, I see echoes of that, you know, protecting the property, the liberties of a wealthy elite at the expense of many, many people of color. I see that playing out in the pandemic in the way of some white folks saying, well, I need to be able to go where I want, do what I want, no matter what people are saying about public health, no matter about other people's welfare. How do you see that sort of white entitlement playing out now?
Yeah, it's really striking again. And there's a rich kind of thread in American history and in American thought that places a very high value on my individual liberty, right? The right to not be told what to do. And that's sort of trumping everything. It trumping any considerations about equality or trumping any concerns about the larger well-being of the community or of the society. And it's something that I think is particularly associated with white Americans and with whiteness, that people feel this intense entitlement to not be told what to do. So you see people not, you know, having a hissy fit over being told that they must wear a mask in a Costco, etc. And overwhelmingly, right, those images that we're seeing and the people at the anti-shutdown protests are white people. So yeah, it very much fits into a larger, I think, theme, and it's something that we explore, and some of the ideas that we explore in our podcast series.
You also talk about how crises in American history, like the Civil War, the Great Depression, have been times of both, you know, progressive or radical pushes for equality and human rights, but also times when powerful people shore up their power. How do you see that playing out right now, that sort of duality?
Right. Every day you read the newspaper, you can see that happening, right? So both of those things happening. So you see people, do you see that there's a greater sense that, for example, wow, maybe this healthcare system that we have really just doesn't make a whole lot of sense if, you know, in addition to the millions of people who are always uninsured, that 30 million more people suddenly lost their health insurance because they lost their jobs, maybe we would want to have a different kind of healthcare system so that it ends up creating space for an idea that was recently considered radical, like universal healthcare, perhaps looking like it makes more sense and is maybe even a necessity, right? On the other hand, you have the Trump administration, for example, choosing this moment to close the borders to certain people or to strip away environmental regulations as if that, you know, has anything to do with anything, but it's sort of like in a crisis moment, and the writer Naomi Klein has written about this, that in a crisis, it'll sort of allows almost a huge distraction or an excuse for people to take actions that are actually anti-democratic or that are in the interests of special interests and not of everybody. So I think we're seeing both of those things play out every day right now.
John, what's your message to white people who may be hearing this and thinking it isn't their problem, or maybe feeling hopeless about these huge disparities? I mean, what are tangible things that we can do besides maybe donating money or posting on social media?
Well, I do think donating money is important. Posting on social media, probably less important, although I'm on social media. It's not completely useless, I suppose, to express yourself. But I think, yes, writing checks and so on is important to the extent that people are able to do that. But I think, you know, just this is just more my orientation as a journalist and a documentarian is to think about how we can help to push toward a society that's just frankly more just and equitable in the longer run, so that people are better taken care of, not only in a crisis, but all the time. And I think we just have 240-year history of this country of just being very accepting of profound injustices and inequalities. And yes, there have also been some great things that have happened, movements and so on over these many years that have made things better and made things less unjust. But we just need to keep pushing and figuring out how to plug into movements and organizations that are out there trying to change the society for the better and figure out how to actually contribute to that.
So you're saying kind of like doing nothing or being passive is doing damage.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, I think that there's that old saying, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. And I think that's certainly true for white people, because especially relatively privileged white people, we are, society advantages us in all kinds of ways. So if we just kind of go about our everyday life and sort of accept that and let that play out, and we're not actively working to essentially give up those advantages that we didn't earn, then we're helping to perpetuate the problem.
Are there particular policies or ways that people can push for change at local and state levels that come to mind for you? Like, what would actually help during this emergency?
I think so many of the most important things that need to happen in a crisis of this magnitude are at the federal level. So some of the proposals to support the states so that states can continue to keep their employees paid, right? So much of it is just basic support so that people don't, in economic terms, right, aside from dealing with the pandemic itself in a responsible way, we have an economic collapse of epic proportions. And so, you know, to what extent are we going to just let people slide into poverty and lose their jobs and their homes and so on, or are we going to shore up people's lives with financial support, whether that's direct payments to people or payments to states, as I said, so that states can keep people employed? Those, I think, are the most immediate need right now. To the extent that similar questions sort of play out at the local level, I think, you know, that's where people can get involved as well as just in this moment, just going back to this thing of mutual aid and just what can we do to help people be fed and to, you know, pay their bills and so on and so forth.
Well, John Biewen, producer of Scene on Radio, the podcast, thank you so much for taking the time.
My pleasure, Hannah.